exclusive 24-hour news, weather, and traffic station. News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. Depend on it.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning, and welcome to Money Matters. It's 6 minutes past the hour here. We have 1 hour for Money Matters today because of Bulldog Brunch coming up. So let's get started. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Of course, our hearts go out to all of those around Europe, particularly France and, of course, Paris. We know about the coordinated attacks in Paris Friday. Automatic weapons, bombs killed 100 plus people. We will continue, WSB will continue to cover, and KRMG will cover the Paris terror attacks. That continues throughout the day. We'll have updates, of course, at the top of the hour and the bottom of each hour. And tomorrow morning, listen for the morning news right here on WSB and KRMG in Tulsa. As we continue to give you the latest on what's happening with the events in France. Of course, and how that impacts markets. Right now, this doesn't say all that much, but we do have futures down about 200 points. That can change dramatically, and it's hard to read too much into that. But it's going to make for a continued rocky investment environment as we go throughout the week. Events like this, of course, are very sad. They also impact our emotion and our confidence in the world that we live in, and that impacts financial markets. So we'll certainly see some impact with financial markets. If you look at what happened on Friday, throughout the day, it was already a rough day and really a rough week for the Dow Jones Industrial Average. If you look throughout the week, we dropped about 665 points throughout the entire week. So we had this tremendous six-week run where the market was up almost 9 full percent, S&P and the Dow, and then we gave back about 3.5% just this past week, really almost 4% for the Dow and a little over 3.5% for the S&P 500. So here we are in really just this continued roller coaster year to date for the Dow Jones, now down 3.25% year to date. Here we are, we're almost getting towards December and we're still net negative on the year. S&P 500 down almost 2% on the year. So all of so much of that gain, and then all of the gain that we had that from the most recent rally where we got rid of all the negative territory into making new positive ground, that's gone. So we're back below water here in 2015. One thought I had this week is that we talk a lot about ETFs and we talk a lot about diversification, and it's one of the most important things you can possibly do as an investor. There's also this thought that if you own, and there was a call last week here on Money Matters that prompted this. I talked about the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index. There's a fund you can buy for that. Of course, there's an ETF that will do that. But if you look inside this ETF or any other large index fund, when I say large, I mean that's very broadly diversified or covers hundreds or thousands, in this case, of stocks, it's a good place for beginners to start. So, hey, I want to just get exposure to the market. I don't want to get overly specific. So I can access a fund, an index fund, or an exchange-traded fund, symbol ET, or the acronym that we use here, of course, is ETF. Seems ubiquitous to me, but I know it's still a relatively new financial term over the last decade or two that more and more investors continue to get familiar with. So when I say ETF, I'm really saying exchange-traded fund, which is the evolution of the mutual fund that we all, of course, know. Exchange-traded funds are just basket of stocks or baskets of bonds or baskets of almost any investment you can think of. And they're a really good vehicle to get a one-stop, very quick, low-cost, and tax-efficient way to access markets in general. Last week, we talked a little bit about the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index. But you can buy or get access to hundreds or thousands of stocks if you look at these ETFs. In fact, if you do, or if you look at the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index, there are 3,805 stocks in that one particular basket. So you can buy one ETF and you get a tiny, tiny piece of almost 4,000 companies. But what if that approach is just a little bit too, what if it's just too broad? What if it's too broad? What if you're the type of investor that would rather own some individual companies, some specific companies, rather than this gigantic basket? The other thought here is that when the world gets scary, and it inevitably gets scary all the time, in fact, it's mostly, we're either about to get scared, we're currently scared, or we're just recovering from being scared. That's the emotion that I often feel as an investor. And the world's just a scary place. Or the market, and sometimes we talk about, or I'll have an investor say, it just doesn't seem like the market's always going down, Wes. And the answer is, so often, we're either going down, we're about to go down in the market, or we're recovering from going down. So much of our emotion is placed around the events that take away from being an investor, meaning that that's the not fun part. When I go back to being a long-term investor, and you think about how you really succeed as a Warren Buffett of the world, who's been investing since he's, you know, today's in his 80s, he started in his teens. So he had this tremendously long runway. And the story you'll hear, one important component in common of all these successful investors that you hear about, is that they've been doing it for just a long time. There's no substitute for longevity as an investor. And I go back to the times when, like today, when we're reminded very painfully how quickly our safety can go away, and the security that we all come to live with can go away in an instant. And we're reminded of this on Friday with the terror attacks in France. And as an investor, I go back to saying, well, what do I really own? Or over time, what if I don't want to necessarily be overly broad? And for me, there's some peace of mind knowing and understanding individual companies that you're participating with, you have ownership in, and you understand. And that's why I did an article this week that'll be on the MSN Money section in a couple of days here, about the title of the article is 10 stocks for beginners or first-time investors. And really, it's not necessarily just for beginner investors. These are for, the reason I say they're for beginner investors, I go back to, where do you start? So you can buy one ETF that's 3,805 stocks, but what if I want to start and own just a few companies? We used to do a segment here on Money Matters called Take a Look Around. And that is really where investors, particularly those who are just starting out, really need to start. Peter Lynch, he's one of the most famous stock investors of all time. He famously said, the best stock to buy may be one that you already own. What does he mean by that? Take a look around in your driveway, in your kitchen, in your living room, in your bathroom, and see where your family's already spending money. What have you already bought? What are some of the companies that you are already paying for their products and their services? Is there a GM product in your driveway? There is in my driveway. Is there a Ford vehicle maybe in your driveway? Are you using an Apple TV or an iPhone or a watch? Are there cleaning products under your sink made by Clorox or Procter & Gamble? Do you have any of these products, like we do in our house, delivered to your door using Amazon? One way to do this, and this is an exercise that I have done over many years now, and now actually have my own, it's called the Moss Consumer Discretionary Portfolio. It's not something that is it's not something that I broadly distribute or haven't really even talked about much, but it's something that for years I've just tracked where our family spending is going, because I know it's trickling to some publicly traded company. And it's a real, you've already passed the test, if you think about it, as a company or a product or service. If your product is in my home or in your home, the company's already had to do something right to be there. So they had to have some sort of reputation together. They have some sort of marketing. They have some sort of value add product. And they had to have some sort of distribution for you to be able to easily access the product and bring it home. So they've done a lot of things right to have something that it finally shows up in your house or your garage. And if you go to your credit card statements, you go to your American Express bill, your Visa, your Discover, whatever it may be, and you go through where your spending has been over the past year, if you add up, you look at an annual spend, you can really learn something that you've done or where what companies are getting the share of your wallet. So this is an exercise that I've done now over a couple of years, and I maintain this Moss Consumer Discretionary Portfolio. So if we stop using a product, we stop buying the kids' Under Armour stuff, and we switch over to Nike, I might literally get rid of our Under Armour and switch to something else. So there's this natural selection in this portfolio, and that's the kind of thought process that goes into taking a look around, just understanding where you're really spending money, who's capturing, what companies are capturing market share in your home, who's making money on your family, because if they're doing it with your family, it's probably happening somewhere else. So I'm going to talk about a few of these companies. I have 10, I actually have a basket, there are 30 of them in the Moss Consumer Discretionary Portfolio that I actually invest money in. There's 30 of them. I wrote an article that talks about 10 of them, and throughout today's show, we'll likely go through a handful of those, and we'll talk about ownership and what some of these specific companies are really doing. How much revenue do they do? How big are these companies? How have they done this year? What kind of revenue do these companies do in any given year? And then do they have profits? What kind of net income comes from these, or do these companies enjoy in any given quarter, in any given year? So that's the theme here today. We're going to zoom in a little bit on Money Matters. When the world gets scary, I like to understand, I really like to go back to understanding the specific companies that we invest in. Regardless of how broad or diversified we are, and we can own ETFs and mutual funds that have lots of exposure over hundreds or thousands of stocks, but it still comes down to ownership in individual companies that are going out every day trying to do a little bit better, grow a little bit more, and earn a little bit more profit. That's what we're attaching our wagons to as investors. And if we can do that for a really long period of time, then that's when we'll become successful investors. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm your host, Wes Moss. You're listening to Money Matters here on WSB Radio. WSB's coverage of the terror attacks continues throughout the day. That, of course, will continue WSB Radio, KRMG Radio, and tomorrow morning's morning news on both of our stations. We'll have updates at the top and half of each hour. So listen first thing in the morning and continue to depend on us here to bring you that coverage and continuing coverage on the terror attacks that happened on Friday in Paris. With that, that is, of course, something that we'll be watching throughout the week. When it comes to the financial markets, anything that is unsettling to the safety of the and security of the world that we live in hits us very hard emotionally. When that happens, we typically see a negative reaction in financial markets and equity markets. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out this week. We're already coming off a very difficult week. So we had this 6-week winning streak most of October and early in November, and then wham, this week hit almost a full 4%. We had falling commodity prices, and we had a couple of key retail companies miss earnings this week, and kind of the rug was pulled out underneath of the market here. Dow Jones down 3.71% on the week, S&P 500 down 3.6%. Now that takes, so that's 665 points in a week on the Dow. The standard S&P 500 lost 76 points. That's about 3.6%. NASDAQ fell over almost 4.5% on the week. Again, so much of that has to do with oil and commodity prices. When oil crashes, it brings an entire sector that's an important part of the market really down with it. So oil fell 8% on the week, now down close to $40 a barrel. Again, part of that has to do with inventories. We are nearly four times higher in inventory stockpiles than analysts had expected. So there's plenty going on here. It's not just equities, it's the oil market that's rearing its ugly head again. And that certainly has an impact on the equity markets, not to mention what happened this Friday in Paris. When we get back, I want to go into these four or five of these 10 companies that are really good places to start for investors when you're trying to understand just individual corporations. So if an ETF is too broad for you, sometimes it helps to really understand a couple of big global companies. And that's what we're going to do straight ahead here on Money Matters. Good morning, though. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning, 35 minutes past the hour. And in this, the remainder of our show today, I want to take a few calls, but also talk about some specific companies. When the world gets scary, I go back for some reason to the fundamental understanding of being an investor is you own a piece of a company. That's really what we do. Whether we have an ETF, like we started the show today, Vanguard Total Stock Market ETF or index, it's a one basket of securities. You could buy it and you own 3,805 securities. So just one share of this ETF and you get almost 4,000 companies. But sometimes in the world where markets are in turmoil and we see a roller coaster in the stock market, I default back to in my head, well, why do we own stocks to begin with? Well, we own them to become partial owners or have an ownership stake in an individual company that they may be hundreds or thousands of people, or in some cases, hundreds of thousands of people all working towards this common goal of moving this forward, this company forward. And that's why I think it's important to understand and reflect once in a while back on some individual companies. I, for many years, have had what I call, this is something I just do personally, the Moss Consumer Discretionary Index. I go through our spending in any given year as a family and I identify the top several dozen places we spend money. And I know then that those companies have done something right because they have effectively earned a share of our family wallet. And ultimately, that money goes towards some publicly traded company. It's very similar to the whole philosophy Peter Lynch has. If you're going to be an investor, take a look around. The best stock to buy may be one that you already own. And I've lived by that a very long time. And it's a really, I think, a relatable message as a stock investor to understand. So I want to go through in my own consumer discretionary portfolio, and again, some of this is anecdotal. This is I want to understand where money for our kids is go, or where it's getting spent. I want to understand where Lynn and I as a couple are spending money, because again, it ultimately goes back to some publicly traded company. So I want to go through. I have 30 of them. I wrote an article that'll be up on MSN Money this week, and there's 10 of them, and I want to go through three to five of these today here on Money Matters. Let's do a quick call and then we'll get to this list. Again, 404-872-0750. Ken joins us on the line. Ken, good morning. How can we help? What's going on?
Yeah, I was talking to your screener, and I think I'm pretty well diversified. I got, like, in my retirement account, I have like a half a 1% in cash, nearly 14% in ETFs, CEFs, nearly 60% in mutual funds, and nearly 30% in annuities and insurance.
All right, so you're it sounds like you're extraordinarily spread out, if you will.
I am.
Okay.
Everything's tied to the market. And my concern
Hold on, let me ask you this, Ken. What market? The U.S. market, large cap, small cap, the international market, the bond market, the commodity market, the gold market. What market are we talking about?
Oh, geez. You want me to go through 13 pages of stuff?
I absolutely do not.
I know.
But my point in asking you that question is this, and my point here is that when you say the market, I believe most of us are defaulting back to the S&P 500. Hey, what's the S&P do? And the Dow? And by the way, the Dow and the S&P, it's fascinating to me that 30 stocks in the Dow, it's only 30, relative to 500 in the S&P 500, and they still work almost in lockstep together, which tells us that you can get a whole lot of diversification only owning 30 companies, as long as those 30 companies represent all different 10 sectors of the economy. Now, if you had 30 companies and they're all tech, or 30 companies and they're all oil companies, you're going to get a very different picture from the S&P 500, because the S&P 500 is all 10 sectors, and the Dow Jones, even though it's only 30 stocks, still represents, for the most part, all 10 sectors.
Right.
You're going to see a lot of lockstep. So when you say, but here's what you're really saying, I think, Ken, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you feel like even though you've got 20 mutual funds and annuities and all these different positions, it's still basically a function of whether the Dow goes up or down. That's how you feel your portfolio really reacts.
Pretty much, because when the Dow goes down, I lose X number of dollars, and it takes like a couple of months, it seems, before that money comes back.
How many years have you been doing this, Ken? And what? Well, let me ask you this: how old are you? And if you can articulate in just one sentence what the goal is for this money, and how many years does it have to effectively grow to fulfill the goal?
Well, I'm 57, and it's about $1 million, so. My concern is I took a big hit in the crash in 2008. I'm just trying to see what I could do to safely protect my money if that were to happen again.
All right, these are real. So this is the same worry. I bet you there are a lot of people listening right now, Ken, that have that exact same question. And I'm going to do my best to try to answer it. I'm going to do it in two ways here. And I'm going to put you back on hold, and I'm going to go into some of these stocks I was talking about. But I also want to articulate to you another really important concept, and that goes a little bit beyond just good old-fashioned diversification. You said, hey, I've got all these mutual funds and annuities, and all the what effectively you just mentioned here are just a bunch of products. So a product in itself doesn't give you safety and shelter from a bad market. A product is just it really is a vehicle, and very oftentimes something that is sold to you through a financial institution that gives you this promise of a brighter day. Hey, you're 57, Ken, you've got $1 million. By the time you're 62, this will be worth $1.6 million, and then you can retire, and everything's going to be great. The reality here is you have to understand really what's inside of all of that. So if you have a portfolio that seems diversified, but yet every time the Dow goes up 1% or down 2%, so do you. That means that regardless of owning 1,000 or 2,000 securities, if you opened up the hood, and 20 different products, it doesn't really mean that you fully are diversified among all the different markets that I touched on when I asked Ken, what market are you tied to? There are so many markets out there, and those markets, some of them are very tied together, meaning that most U.S. stock-like markets, large, mid, small, are very tied together. If you go to Europe and you look at the DAX and you look at all the different exchanges for the different European countries, they're going to move together in tandem. They will sympathize with each other. So you might own three or four or five of those markets, France, Germany, Spain, but they're all going to move together in sympathy. So it doesn't really give you a whole lot of diversification. Where you actually do get some diversification so that you're not completely tied to the market is when you own very different areas of the world. The most stark difference would be the treasury, U.S. treasury bond market relative to the U.S. stock market. Those two markets don't move together at all. They are inversely correlated, or just plain not correlated. And that's the only way you can start having a portfolio that doesn't just follow the stock market. You've got to introduce some of these other areas inside of your portfolio that don't move in sympathy with everything else you own. And the only way to do that, and this is the age-old modern portfolio theory that we probably haven't talked enough about here on Money Matters that is true, effective asset allocation, meaning that you have your assets tied to all these very different markets as opposed to the same. And that's the point here that I'm making with Ken, is that not everything or not every market, even though it might seem as though this is the way inside of your portfolio, but not everything does move in tandem or in sympathy with each other. And that's when you have to really focus in on having areas that are not correlated to each other. Now, some of these examples, I can give you some examples that are just individual companies that don't necessarily move with the market. I'm going to go to this list here of these consumer discretionary companies, or I call them the Moss consumer discretionary portfolio, because this is where these are some of the places that we end up spending a lot of our money on. And it ultimately trickles back to individual companies. Number six on my list out of 10 is a company that if you're in the Southeast, you know, or in the Midwest, you know, and the company very simply is Kroger, symbol KR. Market cap is about $36 billion. So far this year, Kroger is up about 12%. That's even with Friday's drop. So if you live in the Midwest or the South, if you're basically below Pennsylvania in the Northeast, you're going to understand or know this as your neighborhood local grocery store. And I still think of Kroger as this kind of local local operation, but it's the second largest. It's the largest grocery store in the country, and it's the second largest retailer in the United States. So it's not just a grocery store. It's really second only to Walmart when it comes to selling stuff. Now, again, it's mostly groceries, but it's a massive operation. Over 2,600 locations in the U.S. So what's fascinating to me about Kroger as a company or a stock is that, first of all, annual revenue is over $100 billion. It's $108 billion. Net income is almost $2 billion. So it's a company that it's very narrow margins, but it makes money. But it's one of the few companies, if you go back to 2008, which was this terrible stock market year. During 2008, and this is in the midst of the financial crisis, the S&P was down 38%. Kroger was actually up 3%. So in one of the worst stock market we've seen in a century, this very defensive type company was actually net positive on the year. So there are places, and this brings me back to our call, Ken, there are places around the world, there are investments, and this is an example of a particular company that doesn't move in lockstep with the rest of the market. So you can also look at areas, there are multiple bond categories that did really well in 2008. Treasuries did well. Corporate bonds did well. Most municipal bonds did well. So there were other areas, not just one or two, but multiple areas that were non-stock market based, and even some individual companies that actually did well in a year when it seemed like everything else was falling apart. And if you really want a portfolio that will buffer you, it's not going to protect you 100% from this, but if you really want a portfolio that will buffer you in the next 2008, you've got to be able to put a portfolio like this all together. And that's my message here for you today, Ken, which is a wonderful question that we all worry about. I think a lot of investors worry about this all the time. How do you protect yourself from the next 2008? The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. If you'd like to find me and the Money Matters team, we're right here in Atlanta. I do this 24/7, basically talking these scenarios through with investors, trying to help families feel comfortable with what they're invested in. And it's something that if you'd like to chat with me or the Money Matters team, we're happy to do so. My website's wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Those emails on the contact button come straight to me. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead.
Here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. So we've been talking today about specific companies as opposed to just a broad index. I wrote an article that'll be up on MSN Money in a couple of days here. When it does get posted, I will link it on the Facebook page. So it's Wes Moss Money Matters if you're on Facebook. I talked about 10 companies for beginners to look at, for beginner investors to look at. I talked about Kroger today, a couple of other ones on the list. General Motors, Visa, Microsoft, which by the way, 91.8% of America uses Windows. Pretty incredible statistic. And then of course, AT&T. These are companies that our family has used for many years and have been in my Moss Consumer Family Index for a long time. With that, we've got to do a quick prize pack. Ryan Ely, what do we got?
Some technical difficulties is what we have right now.
Oh,
we'll be back with the prize pack here in just a second.
Okay, well, we've got a, let's see, how much time do we have here today? It's not a huge amount of time, so I don't even know if we're going to be able to get to the prize pack. I will tell you this, though. So let's go, let's see if we have time for one more of these here. Let's go to Microsoft for a second, since I just mentioned this. Market cap of Microsoft, $425 billion. Had a decent year, still up about 14% in the year. Annual revenue, $93 billion. Net income, $12.1 billion. So we all know the story. Gates, Paul Allen, they founded Microsoft back in the mid-70s. IPO came out in 1986. Is now worth more than 53,000% than you paid for it back during that IPO date. So pretty incredible. A pretty incredible story. 91.8% of people log on to Windows every single day. With that, we checked the Facebook page for that article. Wes Moss Money Matters, the Facebook page. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Those contact button comes straight to me and the Money Matters team. Enjoy the rest of this beautiful coverage. Stay tuned for coverage of the Paris terror attacks at the top and bottom of each